You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Grede, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grede, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grede, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Albert Breer dropped a bomb in his message bag about the Cleveland Browns, saying, because the Steelers have been connected to a former Ohio State and now Saints wide receiver Chris Olave via trade. And Albert said that the Browns have actually called earlier in the offseason about Chris Olave. And I think just on face value, if you add that move specifically, depending on what they give up for Chris Olave, it would send a very confusing message about the offseason.
Well, so I'm dying to find out at what part of the offseason the phone call was made. As the suggestion here is that it was earlier, and so I'm going to play with the idea it was before the draft. I'm also going to play with the idea it's before they signed Joe Flacco. Was this back when they thought they had a chance to get Kirk Cousins?
That would make more sense.
So if that's true, and we play with that thinking, then there was a world out there where the Browns believed that they were going to win 8, 9, 10 games this year.
I view it as I think teams, especially the Browns, are super smart to understand you have a win range, right? And it's really, really tough when you have some flaws in your roster and how maybe the salary cap rolls up. It's really, really tough to make moves that maybe push the ceiling up, right? The only thing that really pushes the ceiling up for where the Browns are, how they're built, would be if you can get a franchise quarterback. But Kirk Cousins and Chris Olave might pull the floor up enough that you can feel safe if you're Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry going into the season. Yeah, does that savvy?
For sure. Well, I wonder if there was parts of this offseason where they genuinely did wonder whether or not they had to win 8, 9, 10 games this year to keep their job. And at some point, obviously, we saw Haslam come out and say, you don't have to force it. Maybe that's what changed their directions. Maybe just the reality they couldn't get Kirk Cousins. I'm not sure. But there clearly was a change in philosophy for the upcoming season.
Do you think they see that big a difference between Joe Flacco and Kirk Cousins? Because I
think they do.
A big difference, I don't know.
I think they do, mainly because Stefanski's had success with Kirk Cousins, and
Stefanski's had success with Joe Flacco.
Well, he had 5 games with Joe Flacco. We can call success different things. I call that 2 big interceptions in the playoff game, and it just was what it was.
I don't think that's how fans feel about it, but you might be right. That might be how the team feels about it, hence why Joe wasn't back last year.
He had actual postseason appearances with Kirk Cousins and full season's worth of time with Kirk Cousins.
I just think if you replay the entire offseason, and then you add that they trade for Chris Olave, I'm so much more confused going into the season than the fact that they haven't traded for Chris. And by the way, looking, DK Metcalf went for a 2nd-round pick. I think George Pickens was had for a 3rd-round pick. If you could get Chris Olave, I'd probably say he'd be closer to a 3rd than a 2nd, because I don't know, Chris is unanimously what DK is, which is a #1 wide receiver. Yeah, I think that would be a hell of a get.
But I mean, he's a guaranteed 1,000-yard receiver. Obviously, he did have the concussion problem, which you have to think about, but it's a 1,000-yard receiver guarantee.
I mean, Albert said that, and this is NFL jargon for there is a price. Albert saying that the Saints would have to be blown away to make that trade. I think the problem is, and much like with DK Metcalf in Seattle, much like with maybe a different reason, but even, I mean, look at all the wide receivers that have been traded recently that have been dealt for 2nds, 3rds, or 4th. it's not just you're trading for that player, but then you have to pay for him now as well.
Yeah, I just think about how different we'd look at this offense if it was Jerry Jeudy, Chris Olave, and then Njoku and Fannin and Judkins and Samson. I think we'd look at this offense, I think, entirely differently.
Oh, maybe you're right. Maybe that might be the kind of move, especially because he's an Ohio State kid and you look at the history. I continue to go back to, I think you're giving, if you were to trade for Chris Olave tomorrow, do I think you'd be giving your quarterback, whomever that might be, a better chance? Yes. Do I still think that the wheel of possibility with what these guys are going to be able to do is somewhat capped given what's around them?
Sure.
Also, yes.
Yeah, I mean, again, even you can add the best wide receiver in football, whoever you think that might be, to this team, and it's not going to raise it up 4 or 5 wins.
Like, there's a difference between if you added Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson and Chris Olave.
But it's not going to be 4 or 5 wins, though. That's the thing. Like, there's a cap on it. Like, how many wins do you think Olave is worth to you?
I honestly don't even know. A win? 2 wins, maybe?
Okay, so you agree then. You agree that it's not worth a 4 or 5 win difference.
Not for Chris Olave. I don't know about...
Jamar Chase is worth 4 or 5 wins?
I honestly don't know. I do not know, but I would probably say he's worth more wins than Chris Olave by at least 1 win. Is that a hot take?
I don't think that's a hot take. I just think if it's... I think if we're trying to figure out at what point the Browns were taking this offseason, sounds like extremely seriously, and then they move towards a level of, okay, we're just not going to be a very competitive football team. I want to figure out where that happened and what the turn was.
I think the smart thing of what I feel, the Browns went into this offseason with you-know-what and vinegar. And I mean, I've heard some things about how, you know, members of that organization interact with media members who have said that's not going to be a good team going forward. And they shot back saying, remember this text when we're in the playoffs next year. Like, I've heard some of that from the Browns organization early. I've not heard that since March. And I think what they correctly deduced is, they weren't one of the drivers of the offseason. They didn't have a lot of salary cap space. You didn't have a team with a lot of promise to it. If you do open up more cap space, you're going to be maybe kicking the can down the road on a couple older players who maybe that's not the best decision for. And so I think they...
At the time, though, they did have a lot of draft picks.
But I think they correctly surmised, all right, there isn't a quarterback worth it at two, dot, dot, dot. This is how I think they switched from where they've been, which is bulldog mode. And I think they've been bulldog mode since they traded for Deshaun Watson. I think you can actually say they've been in bulldog mode for now two straight regimes, because I think John Dorsey was in bulldog mode from 2018 on. And I think this is the first offseason that they said, all right, that's not where we are. We have to let, if something materializes, awesome, but we have to let it come to us. We can't force it. And I think that's how you end up with an offseason where you go, at some point, it's not coming to us. At some point, it doesn't make sense to overpay for Olave. At some point, it doesn't make sense to overpay for Kirk Cousins. And I think that's how we're here right now, which in the end, not sexy, but something we probably should commend.
Another spin on it too, though. Maybe the idea was, and maybe this happened in March, maybe this happened early April, I'm not sure. But whenever they reached out, maybe they thought it was with the idea that they would have a quarterback at number two.
I think that's fair.
And then they went through the whole entire process. They didn't love Shador. Obviously, they loved him enough for a fifth-round pick, but not number two overall. And but if they were thinking about Shador and a rookie quarterback and starting this thing up, maybe they really were trying to put together as much of a roster as they possibly could.
Which, I'm so glad you said that, because if you had said Cam Ward had fallen to them at two, and I had talked me personally had talked myself into Cam as a potential franchise quarterback, the very next thing I'd want them to do is go get a number one receiver to push Jerry Jeudy to the number two receiver.
For sure.
And just add another body in that room.
You have to help him out as much as you can.
I just don't see the value in doing that now, unless it's an Amari Cooper type trade where, and I don't think the Saints would do this, where the Saints would say, I will do a pick swap in the, you know, midway through third day, and we'll get you give him a fourth rounder as well. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the only way I'd really consider it now, because why? Anything that might make you tangibly better this year might be the difference between you getting the number one pick, the number two pick, the number three pick, and maybe being out of the top 10 and still no closer to getting a quarterback.
Well, I mean, you can see why the Saints are hanging on to Olave, not just for the talent, but like the idea that, you know, Tyler Shuck's going to need everything he possibly can get. And so if you're going to go ahead and see, you got one more year basically to figure that out between the two of them, and then you have to go ahead and either sign him to extension or do what the Broncos did with Jerry Jeudy, essentially.
216-474-0092. Want to hear from you guys. So Albert says the Browns had talks with the Saints about Chris Olave earlier in this offseason and kind of hinted that that might be something to pay attention to the rest of the summer here. What would trading for Chris Olave, if the Browns did that, what would that tell you about their current direction? We'll have more on that, but we got Matt Underwood, Guardians TV, play-by-play man. We'll talk about the Gardos heading into this big Tiger series in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Big, big, big series for the Gardos. Detroit has a 6-game lead off them in the AL Central. The Guardians currently in fourth place in the division, and they're 4 games above 500. It's a loaded division right now, and to talk all things Gardos, we're going to head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. You know him, you love him. Guardians TV play-by-play man Matt Underwood joins us now. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right here. This weather's put a little bit of a funk on us here, as it's not just rainy, it's cold, Matt. I can't do with the two in my age.
Everywhere we've been this year, it's been like this. I mean, we went to San Diego, and it was cold and gray and damp. It just followed us all over the place. So, yeah, the skies are gray here in Detroit. It's been sprinkling all morning long, but I think it's supposed to dry out, so we should be clear sailing tonight. It's going to be chilly, but I think the competition, the divisional battle, even though it's still, we still haven't even hit Memorial Day, there's still a ton of baseball to be played. But, you know, as you just pointed out, you've got the best teams in baseball all residing in the same division. I mean, you know, granted, there's more than 100 games to play, but right now the three wildcard teams all sit in the AL Central.
Promising. I know we want to get to the Detroit series because it's such a huge series, but Gavin Williams, I mean, what a heck of a start last night. And I just, you know, given what we've seen here over the last couple starts, what's the difference for Gavin recently?
Well, yesterday in particular, Rick and I noticed that he was, whether it was by design or not, he took a little off the fastball as he got into that game, and he was painting it. He was locating it in and out. He was moving it around with better command. I think any pitcher, it's great to know in the back of your mind when you need 98, you can reach back and get it. But I think for him to be able to command that fastball, especially down in the zone, when he does that, I mean, you saw the results yesterday. He took down a team that was red hot, swinging the bats really well. So I think that's a huge step forward. Hopefully something really clicked for Gavin because obviously, you know, the arm plays, the stuff is there. It's just a matter of consistently commanding the baseball. And when he does it like he did yesterday, he can be as good as anybody.
Matt, when we talk about the Tigers, everyone goes to their rotation, right, as they should. And, I even think tonight between the matchup, you know, Bybee versus Flaherty, I think that's level in many ways. What do you see when you see Detroit's hot start and how much of it is sustainable?
Well, I think the key for them, as you hit on it, is when you have good starting pitching, like when you've got five guys that you feel confident every time they take the mound.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What that does over the course of 162 is that it eliminates the skids. You don't have many long losing streaks. Therefore, when you build up a little surplus of wins like they have, it makes it difficult for the field to come and catch you. So I think it is sustainable because of their starting pitching. Even if their offense goes into a funk, I think they've got a good enough rotation that will keep them in games night in, night out. And I think they're going to be, I mean, we saw it last year when they ran down the pack and got into the playoffs as a wild card team and then battled with Cleveland tooth and nail right to the final game in that division series. You saw a team that was ready to take the next step, and we're starting to see that here in the early going of this season.
Matt Underwood on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Reinforcements are coming for the Cleveland Guardians. Lane Thomas activated from the 10-day IL. Will Brennan then going on the 10-day IL. How do we work Lane Thomas back into the lineup? Does he just go right back to starting in center field, or do you think it'll be more of a group platoon there?
I think he goes back into center field on a regular basis. I think more importantly than that, I mean, you know, he can play defensively really well in center, but he helps fill the gap, the, you know, sort of the black hole in the lineup that has been the two spot. I mean, that two hole, for whatever reason, with Lane down, they have not been able to find anybody consistently to go in there and give Kwan and Ramirez some traffic and get that lineup going. So hopefully Lane gets in there and he fills that spot at the top of the order in between Kwan and Ramirez and gets this offense on a little bit of a better roll. Because, I mean, I looked at the numbers just a few days ago, and the two spot in the order collectively was 184 batting average, and it had the lowest OPS of any spot in the order. So hopefully Lane coming back. Now, you can't expect him to just jump in and start tearing the cover off the ball day one, but hopefully as time goes on, that'll give the top part of the lineup a little more tread.
Someone who has hit the ball really well is Daniel Schneemann. How much of a surprise? Obviously, you know, we got to know him last year, but how much of a surprise is it that he's just been tearing the cover off the ball?
I think there's definitely been a pleasant surprise. I mean, you know, Stephen Vogt, to his credit, he was sounding the alarm a year ago, telling us that Daniel Schneemann was a really good player. Now, at 27 years old, a guy's never been in the big leagues before, you kind of roll your eyes a little bit. It's like he's just talking his guys up, you know. But we're seeing it this year, and we saw flashes of it last year. And I think athletically, when you can move a guy from the infield to the outfield and there's no real drop-off, you see the athleticism, but now we're starting to see it translate with the bat as well. I mean, that series he had in Toronto was really special for him. That huge home run he hit that flipped that series and got him a series win in Toronto, it was big for him, big for his confidence. I think what's really nice about Daniel Schneemann is the fact that he can play second base very well, and yet they can move him to the outfield and there's no real drop-off. And the same with him and Angel Martinez. These guys have worked extremely hard to be truly versatile players.
Matt, you get the Lane train back today. Carlos Santana, we're getting some signs of progress there. The power's starting to come back. Maybe the swing's starting to come back a little bit. So, if your top five is set, what are the critical parts there? Who are the critical young guys at the back half of the lineup that have to either keep up what they're doing or maybe even take another step here as we get closer to the end of the first half of the season?
You know, for me, it's fairly obvious. You know, we need to get somebody going in right field. And look, I love Bo Naylor. You're not going to find a better human being in the game of baseball. He's conscientious. He works his tail off. He does a great job behind the plate. They need some offense, though. I mean, they need a little productivity in that catching position. So for me, you know, somebody in right field's got to step forward and really get going. And I think you'd love to see Bo. If Bo can give you some offense and you get somebody going on right field, then you've got people in all areas of the lineup that you can count on consistently. And I think those are two areas that I would love to see somebody, one of those two positions, really get hot.
DeLauder activated today. Kafis obviously killing the ball down below as well. Any chance we see any of those two guys at any point this season, Matt?
I don't think there's any reason to think you wouldn't. I mean, because the one thing this organization has never been hesitant to do is promote guys, you know, when they play well, and especially when there are opportunities. And again, this goes back to what I said. If somebody in right field doesn't get rolling, they're not dumb. They know Chase DeLauder is breathing down their neck. They know that C.J. Kafis has been getting a lot of reps in right field all of a sudden. So I think the writing's on the wall. If somebody doesn't get rolling, then one of those guys is going to get an opportunity.
Matt, we talked about this Detroit series. We're actually going to have a conversation about it coming up in about 10 minutes here. Is it too much hyperbole to call this Detroit series this four-game tilt a must win, or at the very least a must push?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, for us, yeah, because that's what we do. We are the hyperbole masters, right? That's what we do. You get people excited. We want to talk the series up. It is a big series. If you're a fan, you don't want to go into the series as a fan and go, oh, ho-hum, it's okay if we lose three out of four. If we don't win the series, it's okay. You want that buildup. I think for the players, though, there's still 100-plus games left to go in the season, so you can't put too much emphasis on this series. Because as soon as it ends, you go home, and guess who's waiting for you? The Dodgers. And then the Angels, and then you go to play the Yankees in New York. So it's an unrelenting stream of games. So you can't put too much emphasis on any one series. But I think because it's a divisional series and there are fewer of those than we had in years past, it makes all of these games a little more important. And the guys understand that. They know. I mean, this was a great battle last year. Every game we played against Detroit was just, you could see the passion, the energy, the intensity ratcheted up. So I think the players will be ready for this. Whether or not they win or lose depends on how they go out and execute.
Matt, almost 50 games in. What has surprised you the most so far with this team?
I think that I wouldn't say it's a surprise, but the bullpen last year was historically great. And you knew that that was going to be tough for them to come back and repeat that. I think what has been a bit of a surprise is how well hitters have adjusted to some of our bullpen arms. Clase in particular, Cade Smith, Timmy Herron, they haven't been as dominant as they were a year ago. But that's not to say that they're still not some of the best arms in baseball. It's just that last year they were so doggone automatic that now anytime somebody gets a hit off of one of those guys, you're arching your eyebrows going, what's happening? So I think all of us have to temper that a little bit and understand that, hey, the league makes adjustments. And as Cade Smith said to me the other day, man, it's an honor that everybody has us in the crosshairs. It's an honor to wear the bullseye. You want people to expect you to be the best. And he said it's a never-ending game of cat and mouse for the pitchers and the hitters. And so they're going to have to continue to try to make those small adjustments to keep hitters off balance.
Matt, we've got Tanner Bibee on the bump tonight. I feel like on any given night, I'm not quite sure what to expect from Tanner. Four earned runs in his last start against the Reds. And then we'll see that dominant performance he had against Kansas City earlier this year. A really good performance against the Phillies a couple series back. Well, where are we with Tanner in terms of his ability to kind of take it up a notch, and how close is he to putting it all together this year?
I think that the thing that you see with Tanner Bibee is that when he takes the mound, he understands the importance of that game. He knows that when they hand him the ball, his teammates expect him to be great. They expect to win that game. He takes that very seriously. I think he goes out and competes tremendously. I love the way he goes out and doesn't give in. Even when he's not great, you can see he's going to find a way to compete and try to hang in there. You mentioned that start where he gave up the four runs. I think a lot of that happened early, and he just bowed his neck and still pitched into the sixth inning, and that was tremendous effort on his part. So I think you're seeing the signs and the growth of a guy who wants to be the ace of the staff. I mean, I think everybody looks at him that way, and I think he's starting to pitch that way as well.
Matt, big picture baseball question. Stolen base attempts are as high as it's ever been right now, and runners are having as much success as they've ever had in stealing bases. Do you feel like that's a better thing for the game to see these guys just kind of running wild out there?
I thought it would be even more so. I really thought that when they changed the rules, pitchers limited takeoff attempts, the bigger bases, I thought we'd really see more action. But I just think that pitchers and catchers do such a good job of paying attention to the run game, varying their delivery to the plate. I haven't seen it. I mean, I know the numbers are what they are, but I thought we'd see even more. I think the catchers do a really good job. I think the pitchers do a tremendous job of paying attention and not letting guys just take off at will. But there's a few guys that are just elite, and we've seen some of them recently, like Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, when he wants to steal, poof. I mean, he's going to steal. He's going to get his. Guys like Bobby Witt. I mean, there's a handful of guys that they're pretty close to unstoppable. And I think that with the Guardians, they don't have necessarily the high-impact base stealers. But like Jose Ramirez, when you need a base, he's going to get one. You know, and when they go first to third, second to home, these guys really are aggressive when they run the bases.
Matt, before we let you go, I did want to get your take on the Juan Soto situation. He's about 50 games into a 15-year contract, and there's just been, I mean, countless, you know, blips here with him and you know, hustle and this, that, leadership, little stuff. And it's funny, like, their manager, the Mets manager, Carlos Mendoza, has defended Juan Soto. Once you paid a guy 15 years, $700 million, is there, like, what can you do in that case if he just turns out to do what Juan Soto's doing here in the short term?
You know, it's funny, Rick Manning and I just had this conversation the other day, and I said to him, I go, you know, when you're in that seat, when you're the GM, whether it's your call or the owner's call, ultimately it has to be the owner's call when you're handing out that kind of glue. But you got to make sure it's the right guy. And I, you know, thinking back, you know, look at Jose Ramirez. You could give Jose Ramirez $1 billion. It's not going to change the way he plays because while he likes the money, we all do, it's not what motivates him, right? What motivates him is I want to beat you as badly as I possibly can today. And then tomorrow when I come back, I'm going to do the exact same thing. Derek Jeter was like that. When I interviewed Derek Jeter, years ago, he had already won the world championships. You know, he had been the toast of the town. And I asked him, I said, you know, when you've accomplished this much and as a young player, what motivates you? He looked at me like I was a moron and said, winning, that's all there is. That's the only thing that motivates me. And so you've got to make sure when you give big contracts, long-term contracts, got to make sure it's the right guy who's made motivated by the right thing. And that's kind of rare, unfortunately.
Matt, great stuff as always, buddy. Bring home a series victory, and appreciate your time as always.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. Matt Underwood there, Guardians TV on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Great stuff with him. We got the Guardians lineup out for Game 1 of the 4-game tilt with Detroit, and I don't think this is going to be a comparison that Guardians fans love to hear. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. This Tigers team is playing like last year's Guardians team, where they're just every bounce is going their way, every break is going their way. The difference is they've got sustainable starting pitching right now, as long as Jack Flaherty's healthy. But they've got sustainable starting pitching right now, and that does make this series incredibly important. If you want to call it a must-win, I got no problem saying it's important to at least split this series at the very least.
Couple things, yeah. I mean, the Tigers are going to play as if they haven't forgotten about last year's postseason.
Yep.
And exactly what happened where, they should feel that way. And right now they feel like they're a much better baseball team. They have great starting pitching. Everything they touch turned to gold. And not only just some of the trades they made this offseason, but the idea that Javi Baez, dead cat, bounced and all of a sudden can play baseball again. It's been three.
It's too soon.
It's been
which
three,
is well. It's been we, three we lost years Dr. of being J bad. This morning.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Forgot about Dr. J.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my insistence to just throw him in a pond.
I walked downstairs today to my mom's dead cat, and you're just dead cat bouncing with Javi Baez.
How did we inadvertently make like six different dead cat jokes already?
I think it's just on the brain.
Is that what it is?
I think we're grieving as a show. You don't even know Dr. J, and you're grieving.
But you told me the story behind Dr. J, and so I'm grieving for you.
I mean, it's been the last cat my dad ever picked out.
And then you take in this cat because this cat needed a good home, and you take in this cat. And I like to think that Dr. J finally got a good, comfortable home, a good roof under Dr. J, and was ready to go ahead and take that in, and then just passed away.
And then it was like, you know what? I'm going to die on top. I've got it good right now. You never know what tomorrow brings. I'm going to die in.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. amazon.com/prime.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Biggs.
You are basically, you're a retirement home for Dr. J. Just the last stop.
That sounds more like hospice care, but which is also what it was.
Hey, at least I can call you Florida, you know, God's waiting room.
That is true. Well, because Florida, there's a few other inferences there. Yeah, I mean, whether it's Baez, I mean, Torkelson actually looks like a big league player.
Kerry Bonds is what I call him. Kerry Carpenter continues to hit.
Yeah, that you mean the Guardians killer?
Yeah, well, that's where he got the
nickname. What a ridiculous player.
After the like third home run he hit in that postseason, I was like, Kerry Bonds to the plate. Congratulations.
I mean, even Gleyber Torres is good again.
So that was the thing. They made the trade for Torres, and everyone's like, all right, did they do enough here? They tried to make a big push for Bregman to get him at third base, and that didn't work out. And then Torres is just awesome.
So I think I love that you said that the Tigers are not going to forget last year's postseason. It's wild. Like this is a May series, and I'm jonesing for it. Like there is some palpable stuff here because you're not playing the best baseball. They cannot lose. I mean, quite frankly, they're on a mission from God, and like. Oh, and by the way, you got juice from last year.
But because we won that series, I feel like it means far more to them than it does to us.
Yeah, well, I think at this point, the Guardians are still figuring themselves out. Like, it's really tough to have, like, juice and hatred and anger against somebody else when you don't even know who the hell you are. Whereas the Tigers come into this series clearly defined at who they are, what they do well, what they don't do well, what they stick away from. And I think the fact that their identity is coalesced to this point puts them in a position of power here that allows them to say, hey, we haven't forgotten last October, and the Guardians very much wanting to forget last October.
Yeah, I mean, think about the conversation over Detroit. Over the past few weeks now, it's been building and building, and now ESPN earlier today had them as the number one team in the whole entire sport. Like, this is where they're at right now. It's amazing how it's all come together for him.
Now, the good news is, if you hate the Tigers, actually is what I like about this series is
you can just take their soul from them this weekend.
Well, no, because they can do the same thing to you.
Oh no, they definitely can.
With Kansas City and Minnesota, you're so far removed from them. There's just not. It's just so hard to get juice between those because we don't travel as much to them. With Detroit, they're literally right down the road. And so I know for a fact I have friends that are Guardians fans that are going to this series and going to multiple games because they feel like the team needs them there. You don't get that in the other towns, right?
Yeah, but they haven't. I agree with the idea, but I think last postseason helped in that, by the way. But I don't hate Skubal. I wish I did.
I think
we were starting to build some of that last year.
I hate Kerry Carpenter a little bit. Keith, don't love him. Don't love him. I feel good for Torkelson and Baez.
I mean,
but
there's
at least a few guys on this Detroit team.
Casey Mize is just a good story now, right? At this point, like there's a couple parts of this team that I feel like Zach McKinstry, for instance, that people are just kind of happy for more than anything.
Can I hate Jack Flaherty?
You can if you want to.
Yeah, not a fan of him.
Going to the Dodgers
gosh.
Was toothless.
Let's see.
But he came back.
He did. He found his way.
He did.
Jason Foley isn't even there anymore. So I can't, like, that was a guy I didn't like, Kenny Powers didn't like him.
I'm trying to find the person that you're just supposed to naturally hate.
I think it's Kerry Carpenter because he is a Guardian killer.
It's got to be it, but it's not as if there's just a club full of guys that we just despise. Because let's be honest about it, last year came out of nowhere for Detroit. And the fact that they're continuing on this year, it's...
What about the Book of Job?
Jackson? Yeah.
Jackson Job. Don't like him either. Another fake-ass Kenny Powers.
The Book of Job?
Yeah, if Tigers fans don't do that, if that's not like a thing. Like, the Book of Job, 3:12, says, I just struck your ass out. I know I'm playing a little with the Austin 316
Do people,
there.
Like, dress up as Jesus and then just, like,
no, you dress up
around.
Like Job. I don't know what Job dressed up like, but I'm...
I see very similar to Jesus, I would imagine.
You get a Job robe, maybe a little mullet back there.
Now the problem is everyone's like, oh, we got Jesus in the crowd. And they're like, no, I'm Job.
No, no, no. I don't think
I'm
you understand.
Clearly Job.
Well, that's why you got to, it's the Job commandments. You have two.
What are the Job commandments?
You have two signs there.
Yeah, that's what that looks like.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's not great because of where I'm holding them.
Yeah,
my
yeah.
point is you get two signs that, you know, details whatever Job was into. Specifically Jackson Job, not
whatever
the book
he's
of Job.
Into. I want the original Job. I want whatever he was into.
We're crossing Jackson Job with the biblical Job.
Yeah, I see what we're doing here.
I just didn't know if you were picking up on that. How big is this series against the Tigers? And a word for the Evan Mobley doubters coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports. Other days it's cooking or music. Or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Audacy podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.